Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm delighted to share the rest of this second series is once again in partnership with HEC. Being an independent and family-owned business, they pull out all the stops to bring that farmer's market quality to the supermarket shelf. In addition to their delicious original range, they offer veggie options too, catering for absolutely everyone, all of which can be found online at heckfood.co.uk and in the major supermarkets too. Hello, and thank you so much for tuning in to Food for Thought, a podcast on a mission to equip you with all the evidence-based advice you need to live and breathe a healthy lifestyle. I'm Rhiannon Lambert, a registered nutritionist, master practitioner, best-selling author of Renourish, A Simple Way to Eat Well, and founder of Retrition, London's leading private nutrition clinic. In each episode of this second series, I'll be joined by special guests, all of whom can be considered authorities in the world of well-being, so that together we can learn fact from fiction and empower the healthiest versions of ourselves with trusted expert advice. With the constantly changing landscape in nutrition, it's hard to know which information is accurate. Everywhere we look, we're bombarded by conflicting messages about food, stipulating what we should and shouldn't be eating. New diets hit the headlines on a daily basis, and we are made to question whether gluten is good or bad for us and see foods being disguised as healthy despite their alarmingly high sugar content. The list is honestly endless. I believe that we all have the right to make our own decisions around the foods we choose to eat. We should be armed with the knowledge to look past these sensationalist media messages in order to make informed choices. So joining me today to uncover the truth behind some of the confusion is Jenny Rosborough, registered nutritionist and head of nutrition for Jamie Oliver. Having worked both in the public health and commercial side of the food industry, Jenny is perfectly placed to advise on how to navigate the world of food marketing. Hello, Jenny.
Hi.
I can't believe you finally made it in. I know you've had a very busy day.
Very busy day. Nutrition is not boring. Say that at least.
Exactly. And I've known you for quite a long time now, and I have so much respect for what you do. So I'm sure that everybody is in for such a treat, because we are confused, I think, Jenny, by all the different messages surrounding food. What do you think has happened?
I think that there's a reason why people are confused, definitely. So food, it's one of those things, and we've spoken about this before, but everyone eats, so to an extent, everyone has an opinion and everyone is an expert in food. Yeah. When it comes to nutrition and health, I think there are a couple of big things going on here where, you know, registered nutritionists are not, the title of nutrition is not properly protected, which is a big issue. So anyone can call themselves a nutritionist and people do really short courses.
Oh, it's so worrying.
It is worrying. And we haven't really got a grip on that yet. All we can say in the meantime is look for a registered nutritionist until we've got further kind of work done there, who are registered with the Association for Nutrition. I think headlines in the media have always been a bit of an issue, so how research is interpreted in one headline.
Yeah.
And now social media, that is such an issue, because we are regulated more than other people. So basically we can say less about nutrition than someone who hasn't got any qualification at all. I think that's an issue.
I do. I completely agree. I mean, actually, that's such a valid point. We can't say as much as we'd like because we know cases are unique, or we have red tape. You know, we're bound by a code of ethics. And of course, you can't make sweeping statements. But for anybody that's not regulated, calling themselves a nutritionist when they've only done perhaps a week or two or an online course, it will never match up to a degree, and it can cause, I think, harm. I would go as far as saying it now causes harm. But there's so many things that I want to bring into this podcast. So let's focus on the main offenders first in terms of dietary myths and things that we see. So we're still seeing a lot of these fad diets being advertised. Like we've just said, on social media, maybe high fat, low carb. I mean, there's even conferences out there now for these types of things. Detoxes, so many others. Tell me what your thoughts are on these kind of fads and what can people look out for?
I think people always need to look at who is promoting it for a start, because there was a petition recently which was interesting. I think it was more around the diet pill, maybe like the skinny teas, skinny coffees.
How many skinny titles there are
exactly,
right now.
Which is an issue, a whole different issue, isn't it? But and about celebrity endorsement of these and how that should be regulated. It's a massive loophole in advertising, actually. So I think we do need to really get a grip on that. But other things, you know, the really common one is you should go gluten-free. Mm-hmm. And actually, as we know, this is interesting. In America a couple of years ago on a main chat show, there was a question that went round to people and they were asked whether they're gluten-free. And a lot of the answers were, of course, I'm gluten-free, you know, as if that's a really good thing. When they were asked what gluten was, no one really knew. No. So to clear that up, gluten is a protein found in wheat, rye, barley, for example. And obviously some people do have an intolerance or have celiac disease. And that's a body's immune system, you know, reaction with gluten. And
that's really serious.
And that's really
serious.
Yeah. It impacts body's ability to absorb nutrients. And, you know, so there are cases, really clinical cases, under doctor's guidance where we shouldn't have gluten. But for most people, it's not healthy to cut it out, because if you consider the types of foods that it's in, it might be breads and pastas. You know, there are other nutrients going on there as well.
It's also in a lot of products that I see, you know, kind of like ready meals and things. People don't realise it's quite a lot of it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, part of it might be that people associate gluten with cakes and biscuits and those types of foods. But that is the cakes and biscuits and the other ingredients. That's nothing really to do with the gluten.
And isn't it only 1% of the population anyway that have celiac disease?
Yeah, exactly. Small. Exactly. And I think that a lot of people would claim a gluten intolerance, but not necessarily be aware of that. So, yeah, if you think you've got one, talk to your GP. But generally, you know, we do want to be eating the breads and the pastas and those types of foods do have vitamins and fibre. And
yeah,
you know,
of course. And you touched on this kind of skinny teas and I've lost count of how many celebrity endorsed skinny. The word in itself kind of gives me revulsion. I don't even know how to describe. what are they? What are they doing? Why do people call these detox products?
Like, to be honest, I think that they're just riddled with false health claims.
Yeah,
like, you know, that you just would not be allowed to really make on another packaging. So with these, they will claim like quick weight loss generally, won't they? I think if you're going to cut out stuff and just have a drink, then you're going to lose weight regardless. We know that in the long run that really isn't helpful. I think that moving on to, you mentioned low carb, that's an interesting one, because I think that for the general population, that's not an approach we want to take. We will miss out again on fibre and really important nutrients.
We're not getting enough fibre, are we?
Exactly, we're not getting enough fibre. So that's really important. There is a discussion, again, that is more research-based and really, really clinical, you know, saying that it might be beneficial for certain population groups, but that should always be done under recommendations from dietitians and doctors. For the general population, I think that we need carbohydrates.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, they're the brain's preferred source of energy, aren't they? Preferred fuel in the body. And I think there's a big misconception of demonising different types of carbs. So the quality and the quantity of them matter more. And that's something that I see you discussing a lot. And when you mentioned also something that's quite interesting, that people are advertising things on social media, but you wouldn't see the same thing potentially on TV.
Yeah.
I mean, are there different kind of guidelines to that?
Advertising rules.
Yeah.
Well, I think with the area that I've been working in a lot is more the advertising around the foods and drinks that are high in fats and sugar and salt, particularly for children. So this is really part of the whole government child obesity strategy, but it's further than that. It's about children's diets at the end of the day. And we know there that there are restrictions, so around what can be advertised during children's programs.
Okay.
But there are big loopholes still. First of all, a lot of children are watching TV online now. Watching TV online, that doesn't make sense. You know what I mean?
YouTube, because apparently YouTube is the new TV.
Exactly. Yes. And then the other thing is the family viewing programmes. So just because children don't make up the majority of the audience, they don't have to have the same restrictions in place. But we still know that millions of children are being exposed. So if you look at the types of adverts in Britain's Got Talent and X Factor for foods and drinks, I think that's where all the manufacturers are going for getting the biggest bang for their buck. And it does have an impact. So we know that seeing these types of adverts increases children's preference for these types of foods and intake for these types of foods.
Must make it hard for parents.
Really hard for parents, because pesto power is a thing as well.
Yeah.
And it just normalises the intake of these types of foods as well. And I think the best comment that I got doing an interview on this once was from the Advertising Standards Authority saying, well, actually, the adverts don't really work, which I thought was brilliant, because they put a lot of money and investment for those adverts if they don't work.
Yeah.
So there is definitely more regulation with, you know, TV adverts compared to what you might see on social media, and
because
they need to catch up.
Social media is scary. I mean, one thing that I'm seeing so much of is that a lot of people aren't transparent. So they're not declaring the truth. It is a filtered world. And I end up discussing this a lot with most guests because it's such a topical point. And it's only growing. But anybody can stand up there with holding a product and make a claim about it.
Yes.
When we know that as registered nutritionists, that claim doesn't hold any stance.
No stance whatsoever. And those people who are standing up there getting paid to stand up there with them are probably not even, they've probably never tasted it.
No.
Need to bear that in mind. Like, we need food to survive. So anyone who's selling you skinny teas
or hair
instead
gummies.
Of food, yeah, exactly, are wrong.
Yep, sweets to make your hair grow. If only it were that easy, guys.
Sounds great.
I know. Now, another thing that I don't personally like to label as a fad, because it's not, but something that we've seen growing as an ethical choice or a lifestyle choice is veganism.
Yes.
And this is interesting because I think it brings us nicely onto the discussion that labelling products as healthy, what kind of goes into that? I know you do a lot of work with this with, obviously, with Jamie Oliver and your previous past with Action on Sugar. To call a product healthy, it's not always healthy, is it?
No. So actually, this is a big and quite complicated area, even for nutritionists sometimes, I think. So if you're going to call a product healthy, then essentially the manufacturer has to have a health claim with it. So, you know, that would be in terms of maybe the fibre that it contains and then what that can do. So it's not that easy for us actually, especially that's, you know, a commercial stance, but it's not that easy for us actually just to talk about healthy foods all the time because it's really about a healthy diet overall. But I think with the veganism, that's really interesting. It's very topical at the moment because we just had Veganuary.
Yeah.
So I've been talking about it quite a bit in the press, and I know that you have as well. And I think it's really useful to point out, it's never about putting people off eating a vegan diet, because there are lots of reasons why people might choose to do that, and a lot of positive reasons. We know that there is some evidence associating a more plant-based diet with a reduced risk of some diseases. But a vegan diet isn't inherently healthier. And I think that that's a really important point to get across. And two of the main things that I think are worth kind of highlighting are, first of all, missing nutrients. So if you are taking foods out of your diet, we need to be adding things in. So we need to be having fortified versions of the plant milk, plant drink alternatives. Yeah. And also, so a lot of these products, and same with gluten-free actually, are higher in salt. So there's been a couple of surveys done showing that,
I mean, even in terms of even the fortification, sometimes that doesn't even stand up to the original product, though.
Yeah, so that's really interesting, especially with the plant-based drinks. We can't call them plant-based milks because some of the manufacturers will claim that they don't, they're not saying that they're a milk replacement. If you look at the adverts, they're definitely being poured over cereal and used in the same way. So the key things that they would miss are calcium, iodine, and vitamin B12. And so what we really want is for companies to be like adding those nutrients in, so fortifying their drinks with those nutrients.
Iodine is something that I think we can touch on a little bit now, and the fact that it's not really there yet, is it, in most of the products?
No. So a lot of them have calcium. Some have B12. Not very many at all have iodine, actually.
No. And some have vitamin D.
Some have vitamin D, which is a really good thing, because we know that generally we find that hard to get, well, from any food, not really just kind of a vegan thing. So they do, which is good. But yeah, we just want more consistency. And I think what's interesting about this is just having the conversation. Really, you know, well-educated friends of mine who are drinking plant plant-based drinks just have no clue. And why would they? So no. We need to get that out there, I think.
I agree completely. And when we said about vegan diets being healthy or not healthy, I have some clients, Jenny, that could literally eat a vegan diet with, I don't know, a vegan burger with chips and fries because they're vegan foods.
Exactly. It's so true.
Crisps. I mean, I think is it Oreos? Oreos are vegan.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of option out.
A vegan sausage roll is not healthier than a normal sausage roll.
Yeah, a particular chain brought out a vegan sausage roll recently. Yes. And it went crazy, didn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. So what should we be on the lookout for when it comes to packaged foods? Now, I had so many questions for you, Jenny. People were inundated with what are the traffic light things?
Yeah.
Could you explain the system of packaging?
Yes, definitely. So on the back of the packet, you always have to have all the nutrition information.
Yeah.
And legally, that has to be declared. On the front of the packet, it's really up to the manufacturer as to whether they put the nutrition information on there or not. Again, it's up in terms of like whether they're going to put that traffic light colour-coded front of pack information.
So it's not legal, they can choose.
So they don't have to colour-code that. So that's why there's so many inconsistencies. And I think, so the biggest role in packaging is the manufacturer. They have such a role to play. And for a couple of reasons, and one of them is really, educating consumers. So we know that the more consistently approach, the more likely people are going to be able to use that and understand it. But the other reason is I think if they had to really show really clearly what was in their foods, then that would really trigger a lot of reformulation. So that means reduction of sugar, salt, saturated fat in the products. So if
is being called for.
It is. And if they didn't want all red on the front, then they all of a sudden had to show that.
Sneaky.
So we do need consistency. Manufacturers have a lot to play there. But basically what they're based on is an average adult's daily reference intake. So a percentage, it shows the percentage that it makes up of your daily reference intake for fat, saturated fat,
and it's often
salt,
written just abbreviated,
sugar.
Isn't it?
Exactly. One of the challenges is it says total sugars. It refers to total sugars, not free sugars. So free sugars are the type that we want to reduce, and they're all the added sugars, including honey and syrups, and also those sugars become free if they're blended in a fruit juice or smoothies.
So if people are looking at total sugars, so you've got the sugars that are inside a piece of food naturally, let's say, like a piece of fruit or something like that.
Yeah.
But if you're adding anything extra at all, then it's free.
So if that apple is blended into an apple juice, then that becomes free sugar. So the type that we want to have less of, because it's outside the cell, exactly. So on the front of the packet, it will say total sugar. So that could include lactose and fructose if it's got fruits in it or vegetables in it. But it's not really distinguished. And then, I guess there's one more thing to say about the labels, which is a bit of a bugbear. They can put, especially on cereals, for example, high in fibre, high in this vitamin, all the rest of it, but it can also be high in sugar. Mm-hmm. And I really feel that we should only be able to make such claims when something isn't, really, really high in saturated fat or sugar or something particularly
unhealthy.
So
this is a problem, I think. And don't a lot of claims have to be in line with the EU? So there must be a cutoff point that's considered maybe low sugar or high sugar.
Yes.
So what we're saying effectively is that if a product is high sugar, then we shouldn't put the label of high fiber, even if it is next to it.
I think so. Mm. That is just my thought, just to caveat that. But I just think it puts parents in a bit of a difficult situation. If you want to claim that this is a great product to have because it's high fiber, then let's not caveat that with your child also has to have loads of sugar. Cereals is just a good example of that, I think. Yeah. And there is hopefully more work being done in reducing the amount of sugar in cereals.
And what about for parents looking at fat on the back of packets? Like, how do they decipher that per 100 grams? It's always there on the back, isn't it? Of which are saturates kind of thing.
Yes, exactly. So the main thing that we want to look at with fat is the saturated fat.
Yeah.
Obviously, total fat does have an impact on total energy of the product, total calories. But something to caveat all this with, I suppose, is that this is all based on average adult requirements. It's not children's nutrition data on the front of the packet. And also it's not, it's always adults. And it's an average adult. So it is different for everyone. Mm. But we have to have something. We have to have an average guidance on there. So with fat, I'd look more at saturated fat. So saturated fat, here's some numbers, see if I can remember them. Saturated fat, we would want to be low in saturated fat, less than 1.5%.
Mm-hmm.
for sugar, we want it to be less than 5%.
Okay.
And for salt, we want less than 0.3%.
And is the percentage on the back of the packs per product?
So it will always have per 100 grams.
Yeah.
And then the other aspect that we can look at as well is obviously per serving, so you know how much you're having.
But so even for parents to have to do that calculation is quite tricky.
It is. And you know what? It's one of those things. The reason why I think the traffic light is helpful is because at a glance, you can just tell if it's a sugary product or if it's high in saturated fat. What we don't want parents to, you know, be sitting there trying to work out and calculate what their children have, because everyone is so different.
And I don't even think my maths is good enough to be working that out every single
day. What? Nutrition is so much maths. I don't think I really was prepared for this.
Thank goodness for calculators.
Exactly.
But I think when you're looking at products, thank you for sharing that with us, Jenny. It's really, really interesting. And what even struck a chord with me is that it is the adult information. So yeah, it doesn't even apply to children. So parents do have a responsibility as well, of course, when they're choosing items for their children.
Yeah, they do. But I think we need to cut some slack for parents almost, because there's so much that is misleading and hard for that. You know, how is a parent going to know all of that information?
Totally. We didn't know before you shared it with us here.
Exactly. And so, yeah, so manufacturers, I'm going to throw the onus back to them.
Okay, great. Yep. So we want manufacturers to change. I think that's a really interesting thing. And when it comes to looking at things that are incredibly high in sugar and salt, for example, like you just said, the breakfast cereals, what was the intention behind the sugar tax, let's say? What impact has that had? Because I know you were quite instrumental in that.
So we were really involved in the sugar tax. So officially called soft drinks industry levy. And basically what it is a mandatory reformulation program. And so what I mean by that is reformulation, like we just mentioned, is taking the less healthy parts out of a product. So reducing the sugar.
Making a new product, essentially.
Yeah. So or it can be tweaks as well. So what is helpful is tweaking original products rather than kind of creating a high sugar version and a low sugar version. And the reason why reformulation is so, so important in nutrition is that it impacts across the population. Mm. So it doesn't rely on someone doing the calculations and trying to work out what's in their food. It doesn't rely on people being particularly health engaged and having time to look when they go around the supermarket and they've got kids with them and they're really busy. So it's essentially improving the nutritional value of the foods on the shelves in the first place. So if you don't change what you eat at all, your diet is still improving. And where we've seen that work really successfully is with salt reduction over the last 10 or a bit more years.
Yeah.
So that's been really, really successful. And people haven't really realised that their salt has reduced.
No. In fact, I've actually seen, and this is anecdotal, not evidence-based. I just have to throw that in there in my clinic. But I've seen a lot of people not having enough salt now.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, cooking with no salt whatsoever.
But you know what? The challenge with that, which is difficult, is that so I think a lot of people say, well, I'm cutting back on my salt, I'm not cooking with it. But about 80% is already in the food. So that's where the manufacturers, again, the onus is really on them. Although, you know, people can do a lot to reduce the salt in their food as well.
No, it's true. It's interesting because like you said, with that having an effect and the salt being a good example. So when it comes to sugar.
Sugar tax. So just setting the scene of where it can be really successful. So basically we're having too much sugar as a population, 2 to 3 times more than is recommended, particularly in children and teenagers. And the biggest contributing source of that is sugary drinks. So if we want to reduce the sugar across the population, it makes sense to take it out or reduce it in these drinks. So that's where the sugar tax comes in. And a lot of other countries, a few other countries have done it. And they've done it from the perspective of just putting a tax onto the drink and making it more expensive. Whereas in the UK, the tax is on the manufacturer. So that's why I'm calling it mandatory reformulation, because if they don't reduce the sugar, then they are charged.
Right. Okay.
But, and actually what happened is they had 2 years to implement this.
Yeah.
I think we were actually, do you remember us speaking at a conference?
We
were there the day that it was announced.
And was.
It just completely diverted my day. But
that
anyway.
That day was chaotic.
Yeah, it was really unexpected, but brilliant news. So that was 2 years ago and they had 2 years to, well, nearly three now, to implement that. And in that time, over 50% of manufacturers reformulated, reduced the sugar to avoid the tax, and overall sugar came down by 11% in that product category. So that's successful. Before we even know, you know, how this impacts on tooth decay and, you know, children's diets and all the rest of it. But initially that seems successful. But yeah, I think that overall with the sugar tax, it's one example, But we also need to see sugar come down, you know, in our, across our foods as well.
Couldn't agree more. And what's so interesting is that public health nutrition is something I think a lot of people get very confused about. Mm. They think the government isn't doing right, or they're always trying to point the blame somewhere. But it's very hard at a big health level to think of something that can help everyone. But what you've said there is that actually by reducing it overall without people really noticing, that's going to have an impact on people's health, whether they choose it or not. So it's quite a nice thing.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, there is some criticism of it, of course. But in my mind, there's no upper limit for what manufacturers can put in their products in the first place.
That's scary.
And exactly. So this is really that, like, why are there cans or fizzy drinks that have more than 10 teaspoons of sugar, more than a child's maximum, more than an adult's maximum daily allowance of free sugars?
Oh, if you look at that and think of that visually in a bowl, it's just revolting.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I should actually just quickly caveat that where a couple of the big brands have not reformulated, they don't want to touch their original products, they tend to pass that cost on to consumers. So that is still happening in a way, not across the board, but for a couple. And, you know, so it does make those slightly more expensive. But research from other countries shows that that tends to make people make choices of lower sugar versions. So,
yeah, I mean, we've got to do something at the end of the day. And it kind of leads me on to the next subject of calorie counting. It's very tricky. And I know recently the government brought in kind of hand portion sizes, all sorts of different things. Yeah. It's very interesting for Jenny and myself as nutritionists to be discussing this kind of thing. But what are your thoughts on putting calories on menus everywhere?
Yeah, so my thought with this is that we do have nutrition information available in the supermarket. We have no idea what people put in it. People, like the owners of restaurants, are putting in.
That is so true.
Chefs, there we go. It's the word that I'm looking for. That chefs are putting into their restaurant meals. So in my mind, it is just being transparent about what's in that food. We know that in America now, it is mandatory that in restaurants above maybe 20 chains, they have to declare the amount of calories in each meal. We do have really high levels of overweight and obesity in the UK. So
we're now the biggest in Europe, aren't we?
Exactly. So, yeah. So we do need to, you know, help reduce those levels. And so maybe by having the calories, that might prompt some people to choose a low calorie option if they want to. Other people might think, well, I don't eat out a lot, so I'm not going to. And that's absolutely fine. It's up to people, but at least they're then allowed to have a choice. And I think it's also based on the fact that we eat out a lot more nowadays than it's not really just a treat anymore.
No, I mean, I can see both sides. I completely agree with what you said. And there'll be other people I know out there listening being like, but that causes unhealthy relationships with food, obsessive calorie counting. And perhaps, I mean, I can see both sides completely. It will be very beneficial and people should have the right to access that knowledge. In fact, I've been working with Deliveroo recently.
Yeah.
And the amount of restaurants that did not have information for me to analyse.
Yes, I can imagine.
Significantly reduced.
They don't have nutritionists, a lot of them. So
no.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
And I think, you know, that is a point. I don't think necessarily, like, I wouldn't like it to be about calorie counting. Yeah. I think it helps people choose just generally, a higher calorie meal or a lower calorie meal, you know.
Yeah, when you go out, sometimes you don't want to think about it.
Yeah, you don't want to. Exactly.
No, but I think it's good to have it as an option there, but also something that you don't have to see if you don't want to. So perhaps that's the solution. It's there if people want to look.
Yeah, and I think, it's how it's done, isn't it? I think that if we can also give some kind of guidance to the whole nutritional value content of that food, so it's not just about calories as such. But, you know, the other key thing with this, going back to the manufacturers and the restaurant owners, is that if they don't have if they have to put this on all of a sudden, then maybe they will be a bit more responsible with the amount of calories that are going into some of their meals, because I think people will be quite surprised.
Honestly, I think so many people would be surprised. If you go out for your average, I think this is a stat I saw, that a chicken korma, I think that can be over half of your daily energy intake. Like, you can look at over 1,000 calories in one curry.
Definitely.
Because to get it to taste that good, guys, there's a lot of extra stuff in it.
Yeah, exactly. And if you're having it once in a while, then fine. But if we are eating out at, you know, restaurants all the time and, you know, all the coffee shops and everything, then I think it's just helpful to have it there. Hold restaurants and, all eating out places really a bit accountable, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a good approach. And so moving from dinner to breakfast, because breakfast is quite a topical topic. I really enjoy breakfast. It's one of my favourite things. It definitely fuels me through the day. But I'm also very aware that for some of my clients, that's definitely a no-go breakfast for them. It's up to them. But there's a lot of confusion about whether having breakfast is healthy. So a recent Guardian report suggested that 31 cereals, porridges and granolas were found to contain more than 3/4 of an adult's recommended daily maximum intake of 3 sugars in one portion.
Can you
expand on this? Because we touched on cereals a lot, but in terms of breakfast in general and the options out there for people on the go.
Yeah. So I think that, cereals are a tricky one, because a lot of them are too high in sugar, are potentially too high in salt as well, although there's been a lot of salt reduction in cereal, about 50% over the last 10 or so years. And I think with sugar, what we're seeing now is hopefully a reduction, because we've got this government reformulation program. So 20% of sugar is meant to be reduced by 2020, and they've had 5 years to do it. So if it's done kind of gradually, bit by bit.
I am seeing low sugar granolas everywhere now, which is great. So many brands bringing out lower sugar versions of their classics.
So there are more choices. But we don't want to put people off having cereals, because also fibre, vitamins are fortified with a lot of vitamins. Exactly. Yeah. So we don't really want to put people off per se.
No. And there's a debate about the impact of food advertising in general when it comes to children, like we've said. So going into your role with Jamie Oliver, because we know Jamie has been really active in campaigning for a healthy generation, and what an incredible experience for you to obviously be working as his like right hand woman, like leading the nutrition camp. I'm so proud and happy for you. What an incredible job. But that's could you tell us more about how active this conversation has been recently?
So particularly around advertising it's on advertising. So we did an Ad Enough campaign last year, about a year ago. That's been going on, and you know, it's at Jamie's, and it's also across lots of different organizations and charities, all working together, which is really good, because we're all basically saying the same message, that exactly. And advertising does have an impact. The other area that we've spoken about a bit, and other charities, and there's a consultation on, is price promotions, are trying to make sure that the price promotions are more on the healthier foods to incentivize that. If they're always on the cheaper ones, then that's always going to draw us.
You never get
that.
Buy one, get one free on a banana. Can I just say that?
Exactly. maybe that will be the new campaign. So,
I hope so.
There's a lot of things going on there, and at the moment where we're up to is filled out kind of and contributed, as have lots of other people, to government consultations, and hopefully they'll start putting some guidelines, a bit more regulation in place. And again, it's not to put people off ever having these types of foods and you know, that are higher in fat and sort of sugar. It's just that at the moment we are having them far too often, and the argument always goes back from industry, well, you know, it's up to the parent, they should be responsible, but actually the parent is being heavily influenced by all of the advertising, the cost of the foods, all the rest of it. So we need to change that.
And that it didn't go down too well with everybody in terms of, I mean, why wasn't it well received by some? Because I thought it was a wonderful idea.
Yeah, I mean, people are always going to complain about things that are regulation-based when you want a bit of regulation. It's the nanny state idea. It's the same with smoking laws and seatbelts and all the rest of it. People don't like being told what to do. But like I said, the reason why we're asking for regulation in these areas is because there has been none at the moment. There, like the amount of sugar in drinks, there has been no upper limit. Companies can do what they want. So we do need something.
Can you talk me through the effect sugar has in the body, kind of why it's linked to all these different kinds of, because now there's a link to heart health, isn't there, with sugar? Could you
So the main thing with sugar is, you know, it's definitely okay to have some sugar. It's not about, you know, I would never promote sugar-free, that we have to go sugar-free.
Can you imagine life without a brownie, Jenny? I don't think I could do it.
Exactly. And that's why things like drinks and cereals tend to focus on those areas, because they're those everyday products. But the main thing with sugar is that it does, well, particularly sugary drinks, there's a lot of the evidence is around sugary drinks in kind of increasing weight gain. So we might not compensate elsewhere compared to if we have other nutrients, like calories from other nutrients. So we might not necessarily get as full from the sugar. But I think the thing that is often really missed is tooth decay.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. So they're quite simple things that people probably really aware of. But we just, so we need to make sure that we're not having as much as we have at the moment.
Especially for children. And I feel so sorry for, so there's young children growing up. And I think the stats are, if you are obese in childhood, you're more likely to be when you are older. You're more likely to develop. I mean, type 2 diabetes is now being developed in children as young as, well, below 10.
Yeah.
And I think all of those things are quite worrying. But what you've just touched on is really interesting, how it's not just calories in, calories out, because it is, but it's the type of calories.
Exactly.
If you don't feel full and satisfied from the calories you're getting from sugar and you're lacking vital nutrition,
exactly,
it will affect growth.
Yeah. So if you're, so one thing that we've spoken about quite a lot is energy drinks. And I think the big issue with energy drinks is that children are having them on their way to school instead of breakfast. and having those. And then, so the good perspective from here is to hear from teachers, because they see it firsthand, the impact,
what,
you know, and again, it is anecdotal, but
drinks,
they're seeing
those
it.
Breakfast cereal drinks, I've seen those as well. I think, isn't it? I don't want to say the brand name, but you know what I mean? Those biscuit drink things.
Biscuit drink things. really, they sound really nutritious.
Yeah.
do you know what we really want to be doing with breakfast? Although I know that this is ideal world, so the reality is very different. Mm-hmm. But we want to be, you know, sitting down together, eating breakfast and having conversation and making it a healthy meal time and all of those things. In reality, like, I suppose families are really busy in the morning and there is quite an eat on the go culture. So I think that the most important thing is to get the child, if we're talking specifically about children, to eat breakfast.
This is when lovely recipes like overnight oats come into play. Because if you just whip it up the night before and shove it in the fridge, then it's there ready for you in the morning.
Plan ahead, get the child involved.
Yeah. And I know it's very easier said than done. Of course, everybody's lifestyle is different, but I couldn't agree with you more. I think we need to go back to basics with how we surround ourselves with food and how we view it.
Yes.
And one question to also add, this is from me to you, that I kind of wanted to ask and you were in here as well, is now being a part of a campaign, so as a nutritionist, what are the questions you're most commonly asked now you're associated with Jamie Oliver compared to when you worked before with, let's say, Action on Sugar or as a solo, you know, freelance nutritionist?
Yeah, that's so interesting.
I don't know if there's one in particular.
It's always about the sugar tax, which is interesting, because I did a lot of work on the sugar tax at Action on Sugar beforehand. But Jamie's obviously associated with that for really, really good reasons. So usually get asked, and most of the time, you know, if people are talking to me about the sugar tax, I'm like, oh God, yeah, sorry. but it is, I do, you know, I actually am really proud to be part of that work because I think that it is important, and it's not about going and taxing every single food out there. That's not it at all. But to actually get the government to say this is important enough for us to act on it, we care about child health. What that does is that kind of opens the doors then. You should care about child health. That is your job, amongst lots of other things. And what else do we need to do now?
Totally. And there's a lot of people out there that are not open to government implementing anything really in general, but actually we have to look at it at a basic level. It is purely for the prevention of strains on the NHS in future years, for the health of the nation. And I may be sounding like a bit of a dreamer here as well, but I think we have to remember that no one's choosing to be in a state of poor health just as much as they're not choosing to consume products unknowingly that contain that much sugar.
Yeah, exactly. We can only be as healthy as our food environment.
Yeah.
So until that is really changed, it's not going to impact them, you know. And we know that, for example, there are links, lots of evidence linking obesity with more social deprivation and mm-hmm. cost and time. All those things impact our food choices, loosely, our food options.
Yeah, I know. And this is where I have it, because I see a lot in kind of, this is moving into a fitness world, where I see a lot of debate on, well, it's simple. The solution to obesity is calories in, calories
exactly.
out. Like, if it were that simple, we would not have a problem.
We wouldn't have a job either.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I know. Right, so we've got some questions from followers. I've been putting out the feelers all week. So you haven't seen these yet, but you're going to smash these. So you will be fine. Oh, that's a gorgeous name. I can't even say. I think it's Lila. It's spelled L-I-L-A. So Lila or Lila. Maybe Lila.
Let's go with both of those.
Okay, Lila or Lila?
I think Lila.
Okay, Lila. Sorry, Lila. My little sister loves sugary cereals for breakfast, but I know they aren't great for her. What alternatives are there that still taste good?
Oh, that's good. So I think that goes back to looking at the, if they have the, a lot of cereals do have front or pack traffic light labelling now, actually. That was another campaign.
Oh, and can you help us to say how much they should be looking for in a low sugar cereal?
Yeah, so the low sugar, if they don't have it on the front of pack, obviously if it's on front of pack colour coded, then you're looking for green or amber, that's medium.
Yeah.
So to be realistic, but otherwise on the back, it would be less than 5%, so less than 5 grams per 100 grams. So that would be low. We don't always have to go for low. We're just going to try and have less of the red. Mm. So have a look and make an informed choice that way. But also, if it's hard because they taste different, so, you know, topping up with fruit and creating other tastes, or sometimes I think to start with just... you know, mixing in maybe the favourite with another cereal and gradually kind of changing.
That's a really good idea.
Reducing the old one.
Because the kids will know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Their taste buds will definitely know. So Lauren has said, which of the plant-based milks are healthiest?
Okay, so with this is an interesting one, because obviously you can get your oat and your almonds, and there's lots of different
God, there's
types.
So many. I mean, I can't... Yeah. Coconut, hemp,
yes.
rice, you name it.
There are so many, aren't there?
Yeah.
So, and that's a bit of a nuanced question, because there's obviously kind of benefits of, or different benefits of all of them, but there's not that much difference. So to be honest, I'm more concerned about people looking for the fortified versions.
Mm.
There's not many of those with the full fortification, but looking for ones that say on the back that they have iodine, vitamin B12 and calcium. I think that is the most important thing, and then choose the one that tastes best for you.
I love that. It's all about the taste. So interesting, because I judged the Apprentice final this year, and it was a plant-based milk product.
Yes.
And one of my feedback questions that did not make it to the actual show, because it's to do with actual health and nutrition, was, are you going to fortify this product?
Because
it's something that the lovely Camilla, who's an incredible young entrepreneur, she hadn't thought about, because she had no nutritional guidance. So I guess a lot of these companies are marketing healthy, untouched products. I hear the word nasties being thrown out a lot.
Yes, actually, this is something I've been thinking about as well, and is a bit of a bugbear, because the same with organic. The organic milks, they can't be fortified, and people are led to believe that organic is, again, inherently healthier. Mm. So we do need to get that message out there, I think.
I agree completely. So if someone's saying nasties in the milk, it's not actually anything nasty about it. It's just they're fortifying your product a lot of the time.
Vitamins that you need.
And those vitamins may look like funny names you can't pronounce, but it doesn't mean they're bad for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Anna has said, I'm confused about what to buy, full fat or Greek yogurt, which is best?
Interesting. Just go for the one that tastes nicest. Yeah. I think be careful if they're really, really, really sweet. You don't, every day, you don't want to have one that's got loads of sugar added to it. But if it's a Greek yogurt, you know, full fat sort of plain yogurt, then just go for the one you enjoy. I think that's great to eat.
Because I see Greek versus Greek style a lot on the packs. Mm. And there is a difference between Greek yogurt being actually strained and traditionally probably contains more of the healthy probiotic stuff.
Right.
Compared to Greek style, which is like runny and sloppy.
Yeah.
You know, when you get the spoon, it's like...
Sometimes the low fat ones do just feel a bit watery. That is not a professional comment. That is just kind of my opinion. I think that, you know, yogurts are really nutritious. Be careful more about loads of added sugar.
Yeah, be careful for like the fruity flavours and things like that. So Tom has said, apart from protein, lots of foods say that they're gut friendly. Should we all be eating fermented foods in our diet, or is it unnecessary?
See, that's a good one that I'm not really claiming to be an expert, so you might be better answering this. But I think that the most important thing here, especially when it comes to kind of gut health, is having a variety of foods to get, you know, lots of fibre in. Yeah.
I completely agree. I think, Tom, like Jenny said, variety is key, and the more you can get in, the better. There's definitely no harm in chucking those in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, fermented foods. My favourite fermented food is miso. Oh, yeah. I chuck it on everything when I'm cooking. It tastes so good. But I'm not really a fan of sauerkraut.
Yeah.
It's quite strong.
Not something I add on the daily basis.
No, so fair play to you if you're a sauerkraut fan. Well done. Caroline says, I get so overwhelmed with all of the nutrition advice on the internet. Where do I go for the real stuff and stuff that I can share with my family?
That is a good question. Okay, so if you're looking on social media, then if someone's given nutrition advice from a professional perspective, you want them to be a dietitian or a registered nutritionist. So... that's really, really important that you're looking for that. Stay away.
How can they tell?
Stay away from the celebrities.
Yeah,
I think we just have to say, don't we?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And be honest.
We declare it.
Yeah.
So some people just say nutritionists.
Yes. So you need to. I think if they're a registered nutritionist and have done a degree, then they will say that because we've just had it drummed into us. So I think you kind of have to probably just look a bit more closely in that in that respect. Probably, you know, not necessarily the most glamorous of websites, but if you're looking up something, then NHS Choice is always a good starting point because we just know that it's evidence-based, and then that will link you to other evidence-based sites as well. But British Dietetic Association, British Nutrition Foundation, are good websites too.
Really, really good information. Thank you, Jenny. So we're moving on to my favourite part of the podcast. This is a quickfire round.
Uh-oh.
I know. It's called Fact or Fiction.
Oh, no, I'm going to get caught out here, aren't I?
No, you're going to be absolutely fine. So you're going to say fact or fiction. And we actually had an answer. I'm going to give this to you as a thing that a guy made up before called, what was it called? Faction. Because he didn't know.
Faction.
He just came out with it. He's like,
faction,
I don't know.
That's really good. I'm going to use that.
I know.
Faction, right.
Okay.
Got it.
Going gluten-free is healthier.
Faction. No, I'm joking. That is fiction. Unless there's a medical reason.
Love
then
it.
That's really important.
There we go. Carbs make you fat.
Fiction.
Some teas can detox and remove toxins.
Fiction.
Breakfast cereals are healthy.
Faction. So, well, we've talked about this, haven't we?
Yeah, go for it.
Look, really nutritious stuff in breakfast cereals. We need all the fiber, the vitamins, but let's just try and choose ones that have a bit less sugar.
Now, this is an interesting one. Natural sugars like maple syrup are healthier than refined sugars.
In the amount that we consume them, in the quantity that we consume them, that is fiction.
Ah, so because we didn't touch on this. So when people always say, they always say, oh, because it's honey, it's better for me.
Yeah.
What's your stance on that?
So honey is still a free sugar. The risk actually is that because of the consistency, we can end up having a bit more of it. So it's free sugars, the type that we want to reduce. Yes, there might be some minerals or nutritional benefits in there, but it will never be at the amount that we would have to have a lot of honey for that, basically.
Yeah.
And we can get those benefits elsewhere.
Agreed. Sugar has a place in everyone's diet.
Fact.
Plant-based milk is better than dairy milk.
Fiction. It's a bit nuanced, isn't it? But generally, for everything we've discussed, it's not. They're not necessarily healthier.
There we go. Healthy eating is more expensive.
Faction. I think, you know, it depends how you do it, and I think it depends on if you're in a rush and you're running around the supermarket and you're looking for, you know, fruits and veg, and you might be put off and think they're quite expensive, but. Planning and lots of the frozen fruits and veg, which is a really good thing that we should point out, actually. Because they tend to be really nutritious. Well, they are really nutritious.
More
lock
so.
In a lot of the nutrients. They tend to be more nutritious. Exactly. So not necessarily, but I think that on the surface, it can seem that way. So I understand that question.
I'm still waiting for the buy one, get one free banana. So please push that through.
New campaign. Yeah, we're on it.
We should all be eating superfoods.
Fiction. So, you want me to elaborate on that?
Yeah, go on.
I think that we tend to call food superfoods, don't we? But actually, we just need, this is a really fun answer, we just need a balance and a variety of lots of different fruits and vegetables and grains and nuts and seeds and protein and, dairy.
All of that
and
together is super,
it.
Isn't it?
By exactly.
Okay, if you can't pronounce the ingredient, it probably isn't that good for you.
I don't know. I had someone like, asked me, how do you say riboflavin yesterday? I was like, yeah. No, so, you know, they couldn't really say that. So, no, that's fiction. Sometimes the vitamins are not that easy to pronounce. But also, I do know why people are saying this. Like, there is that... I think there is something too, unless it's fortification, if we do have a really, really, really long ingredients list, then it is a bit off-putting.
A classic example of that is a huge, like, man-sized tub, sorry to be stereotyping there, but it's true, of protein powder.
Yes.
And you see the ingredient list on the back, and it takes up, like, the entire label. Yeah.
And we probably wouldn't understand everything that's on that list.
No, we wouldn't know what was in it. That's when it's wrong. Jenny, thank you so much. So that nearly wraps up the whole episode. But as with every guest, we finish with a food for thought. Mine today is that large numbers of you have experimented with dieting in some shape or form, and some of you may have even made more drastic changes to the way you eat. If you have, it's likely that you will have seen some results, at least in the short term. But what faddy diet peddlers don't share is that the true measure of a diet isn't how you feel hours, days, or even weeks later. It's how you feel after months and years. There are so many non-evidence-based marketing claims out there that try, and often succeed, to convince you that something is healthy in a bid to make you part with your money, when in fact the opposite is true. To ensure that you are spending money in the right places when it comes to your nutrition, ensure to take some time to understand what goes into the food you eat. Get familiar with food labels, like I've discussed today with Jenny, and do not take all claims at face value. Also, knowing where to seek nutrition information from is key, because as we've discussed today, seek a qualified nutritionist or registered dietitian if you are ever unsure, not your favorite celebrity or influencer. So if Jenny, if you'd like to share one thing for all of our listeners today, which would be your food for thought, what would that be?
What would it be? Oh, there's loads of things that we've already touched on. I think I definitely agree with what you're saying about just, you know, we need to be careful about who on social media, particularly who we are getting nutrition advice from. But I think, just touching on the veganism thing, because we've spoken about it a bit and it's really topical at the moment, just if you are taking things out of your diet, make sure you add plenty back in as well. And a tea is not going to replace a diet full of nutritious foods.
Amen to that. Jenny, thank you so much for
coming on. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening. It's heartening to know there's such a craving to hear from expert voices in a world full of confusing nutritional advice. If you enjoyed this episode, you'll love what's coming next week. So click subscribe to be the first to hear it. And please do leave a 5-star review. It really does help get our podcast out there and hopefully help more people. For more information about my nutrition clinic, books, healthy recipes, events, retreats, and so much more, please visit nutrition.com and follow me at nutrition on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. Summer will come around in no time, and we all know what that means. Get the barbecue out, and with Heck's new range of veggie burgers, whether vegan or vegetarian, thankfully there's absolutely no need to miss out on the deliciousness. Gone are the days of tasteless veggie sizzlers, as Heck has now released its veggie sausage flavours we all know and love as burgers. Choose from the exotic Bollywood and sweet fusion flavours, or the veggie beetroot and super green options, and rock up to that barbecue with a smile. You can find Heck veggie burgers in Tesco or online at heckfood.co.uk.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.